Hey, everybody, it's Scott again, and welcome to another fantastic episode of the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. We got a big one for you. It's a good day to be alive, people, and it's a great day to talk about some of the sponsors that make this podcast possible. One of the sponsors is Manskirt Brewing, which is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Manskirt Brewing always has seasonally inspired ales. They just expanded the brewery to brew you more beer, okay? And some of those beers are getting ready for their Oktoberfest, and that's September 29th, 30th, and October 1st, so a couple weeks away. They also have their one-year anniversary party coming up, which should be in early October. Manskirt Brewing is just a great place to go try some different beers and a great environment to check them out. So go check out manskirtbrewing.com. Now, the Adirondack Brewery is another brewery that we are thankful to have on this podcast, and they're located in wonderful Lake George, New York, one of my favorite places on the planet. Now, you go on a late vacation and a late summer vacation, go stop for a beer and a burger at the Adirondack Brewery. Now, their event season is coming up. What that means is they have their first ever ADK 5K, the Adirondack 5K, on Saturday, September 16th in Lake George. Just over 20 days left, the race is over 75% full, so don't wait to register at www.adk5k.com. A month later, on Saturday, October 14th, the brewery is hosting the 12th annual Oktoberfest Brewfest. Early bird tickets are on sale now. Save $10 by purchasing new tickets before August 31st. Just search Adirondack Brewery Oktoberfest on Eventbrite.com. And on tap right now in the pub, they have Puree Plum. Puree is a series of oak-aged fruited sours. The plum variant has a lively carbonation with bright notes of plum preserves and a vibrant lemon zest acidity. That one's not going to go last long. So go check out Adirondack Brewing, Adirondack Brewery, and take a trip. Take a trip up to the beautiful Lake George. Now, Demented Brewing is the third brewery that sponsors this podcast, and they're located in Middlesex, New Jersey, with one of the coolest tap rooms. Sunday releases just about every single Sunday. In fact, last Sunday they just released Tom Yum Bia, their Thai sour, brewed with kefir, lime leaves, galangal fruit, lemongrass, and Thai chili peppers. This Sunday, they're going to be releasing a small batch of their new American Hefeweizen. So definitely go check out Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. Susan Robb is a woman that helps this show out of Toronto, Canada. So it just shows you the power of the internet. So she lives out her mission to inspire others. Susan is a client partner for the Center for Leadership Studies, original home of situational leadership, which is deployed in over 70% of top Fortune 500 companies. She represents a lot of different great speakers, Paul Templer, Coach Jim Johnson, Bob Rathbun, Randy Taylor, all who have been on the podcast, and she's got several more coming to us. She got us Muffy Bennett, Dave Andrechuk. So she's linked in with a lot of motivational speakers and just really overall good people. So go check out Susan Robb, and check her out on LinkedIn and give you a little bit more of what she does. So that's Robb, R-O-B-B. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company located all over the state of New Jersey in craft beer bars and breweries now. Each week we play trivia. We got bonus items. You can win prizes. You can be last place and win prizes to New Jersey breweries. So it's just a great night out with the friends. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, we have an awesome podcast today. Joining us, if you've ever seen the show Three Sheets or Chug or Drinking Made Easy, the one and only host of those shows, Zane Lamprey, joins us on the podcast. And we're also joined by David George Gordon, and he is a bug chef. Yes, that's correct. A chef that writes bug cookbooks. So with that, enjoy the podcast.
This is Zane Lamprey from Chug on Netflix. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Get your shenanigans going when you drink beer.
Hey, I'm David George Gordon, better known as the Bug Chef. I love to cook with everything from termites and ants all the way up to tarantula spiders. And you're listening to me on Verbal Shenanigans.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic, which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
I feel like playing the intro while we're here gives us a little bit of energy. We're dancing a little bit and getting into it.
Like, we should go outside and do, like, a WWE entrance to this. Right. Like, when the bagpipes hit, it's just like, oh!
Well, remember like, your old, like, Ray Lewis warm-ups for comedy? Mm-hmm. This is what it reminds me of. Like, we're getting...
It's comedy time!
I'm ready to do... talk radio. But welcome back, everybody, to episode 160 something. Happy to be back. It's eclipse day, Mike Berlew. Solar eclipse day.
Yeah, it happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't wait. Put it on the calendar, 2024, next one.
I know. It's just a little disappointing.
What did you all think would happen?
A little disappointing. I don't know. I thought I guess where if you saw a full eclipse, it would be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But ours was just like sun.
Hi moon.
Well,
bye moon.
Yeah, I was kind of pumped up for it. I was laughing at like all the extreme danger warnings and everything. It's like, if you stare into the sun like regularly, there's something wrong with you. Why would it change on eclipse day?
Yeah.
You know, like,
hey, wait a minute. That's not the regular sun.
I can't see now. But I was pumped up for it. I wanted to drive to this, there's like a hawk watch in Rockaway.
Okay.
Where it's like a big, I've been hiking there with Obi before. And so I thought that would be cool, but I couldn't get there in time, so I'm just driving around aimlessly.
So
I'm
is like, that a Burger King parking lot?
So I basically drove towards that direction, and I realized I'm not going to make
towards
it.
Towards the sun?
Yeah. I got too close to the sun. Burned my wings. But I drove that direction. I turned around. I'm like, you know what? I have to watch this from home, and I went out in the kayak. I thought it'd be cool to watch it from the lake. Now, in my mind, I thought like it would get real dark and it'd be kind of cool out there and like eerie, maybe a little bit. And I brought the cardboard just in case to like poke a hole in it. So I'm going out, and now Alex is calling me. Like, she literally called me while I'm out on the lake. Like, babe, like, you're not going to look straight at the sun, are you? And then she's like, what you doing? I'm like, I'm out on the lake trying to get to a spot where I can see. Well, what are you doing? Like, you're not going to look right into it, are you? I'm like, yes, I'm going to stare.
I'm going to stare within directly. The sun's soul and say, I own you. I am Scott Brennan.
She was, like, super nervous that I would just sit there and melt my corneas.
It's like that dude from Indiana Jones. He drank from the wrong cup, and it was just like,
yeah, it's like, like, I don't know if I should take that as she thinks I'm just really stupid or she actually cares about me. So
this is really burning my eyes, but I'm going to keep on it.
She's probably like, oh, my God, I got to go call my boyfriend. He's the type of guy who will just stare into the sun. but I bring my cardboard out. I'm floating around, and I'm waiting, and I see it's starting to kind of happen. It's cloudy. And so then I see it's actually happening, and I'm doing the whole, like, trying to check between, you know, like, just peeking at it real quick every once in a while. I'm a survivor. Are you a survivor?
Yeah, I'm a survivor.
You're an eclipse survivor?
Yeah.
Me too. But and I noticed,
never forget.
And I look to the shore by the houses, and there's, like, a couple, like, young kids using the cereal box thing that they told you to do online. Like, I don't know.
Heard of it. Like, I didn't have glasses. I was at work. And I saw the instructions on, like, how to cut holes into a shoe box and see it with a piece of paper and aluminum foil. But I'm like, probably at work, everybody would be having glasses. And I don't want to be that one dude.
Who whips out. You're like, Costco-sized Cheerios box. You put it on your head like a helmet.
Guys, tell me where it's at. I got to be behind it at all times to see it.
And I could picture you, like, doing it and, like, doing it wrong. So you're, like, having to ask for help.
I'm, like, looking into the aluminum foil, they say, to put, like, a little pinhole into it. I don't see anything.
Yeah, I didn't get the pinhole thing either. Like, I was like, it's not working. Maybe my hole was too big. I tried the cardboard. I don't know.
I have no idea.
But so I see these people doing a couple of them are doing the cereal box, and I'm like, and I noticed they're, like, passing around the glasses. I'm like, oh, man. So I'm like, So I'm not that far away. So I'm like, maybe if I accidentally float over there, they'll let me like see through the glasses. So I like take a couple paddle strokes, and I like eventually like paddle right near them. And I see the one woman, she's passing around. She sees me. She, like, makes eye contact with me. And I'm like, you know, just chilling out there.
And don't mind me just sitting here in the middle, like, next to you.
And she's
doing nothing.
She gives the glasses to the one person. She sees me. And then she, like, walks over to the next residence. So, like, maybe, like, 30 yards away.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, well, let's paddle a little bit forward. And I paddle, like, around the boat. And then, like, just pretend I'm just casually sitting in front of that house. And finally the one woman's like, hey, you want to try these? I'm like, you know, like in my mind I'm like, yes, but I'm like, yeah, sure, you know. And then they gave them to me, and that definitely made a difference. You could actually look at the sun and see the
sad whole part. It was 5 a.m. sun wasn't even up yet.
But yeah, the glasses made a big difference. But yeah, I thought it was gonna get a whole lot darker. I was a little disappointed.
I mean, I kind of knew going into it, like even looking at where they said where you could get 100%, it was like Missouri and North Carolina. It's like, you know, they got nothing there. Let them have the eclipse. I mean, I knew that we weren't going to get like pitch black, but people were reacting.
Let them have it.
Good for you.
Good job, Berla. Well, you're so thoughtful. Let those Southerners have their
Scott, you know what? I'm going to give some to Idaho just for you.
We just went through Charlottesville. Let them have the eclipse at least.
No, they were too high. North Carolina got it. They're true. Dealing with transgender bathroom stuff.
Ah, yes, yes. Yeah, I was a little disappointed, but, you know, it's cool, I guess. I don't remember an eclipse being like this talked about that much.
I mean, I think they only come around like a decade. And I guess in 2000, in the early 2000s, if it happened, it would have been a big deal. Social media was still big.
Yeah. Well, especially since the Earth's flat, like, it's amazing they could predict it.
Yeah. I don't get it. I mean, maybe the sheet of paper flips over and then it's like, oh, that you're blocking the sun.
That's how you know, as a society, we just have nothing important to do. That people will just buy into the flat earth thing and really try to go with it. And you know it's just deep down to just anger people and get, like, Twitter trolls and conversation going. There are people that believe the earth is flat right now.
I'm trying to
This
remember.
Is why, instead of an eclipse, we need, like, a meteor to hit just to thin the herd a little bit.
I'm trying to think who. I think Shaq said the earth was flat.
Shaq. Kyrie Irving.
Who? Who was that?
B.O.B., the rapper. He was the big one. He was leading the charge.
That was like battling Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I got a shot at this.
I feel like Neil deGrasse Tyson could just tell me anything. Like that would be a great bit. Like, he's so smart that people just believe him.
Yeah, he should, like, read from The Onion and then tell people facts. You got to put mayonnaise on your face when the eclipse happens, or else it will burn your face off.
Like I said, if we had a thinning the herd of flat earth believers, would anybody really miss Kyrie Irving and B.O.B. and Shaq?
I mean, I guess the Cavaliers will miss Irving, but...
No. But, so, I got a couple solar eclipse myths, okay? And, like, what it meant in different cultures, right? So I'm going to read some of them to you.
Okay.
One of them is fake.
One
is fake.
So, wait a minute. So if these are myths, is the one fake one true?
No. The one fake one,
so
I made
there's,
up.
Okay, so there's facts and...
Well, yeah. Like myths that, like...
There's actual myths and a myth you just made up a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, not like myths like false things, like ancient myths, like gods and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that to have my description. You know, like gods and stuff. That, but
those mythological things, you know? Like the Jesus dude.
Yeah. But, all right, so let's get this going here. I just want to get some background music.
All right.
So keep talking.
All right, so what to talk about,
Real good, killing it. All right, here we go. All right, so in India, the demon spirit Rahu steals and consumes the nectar of immortality, but is beheaded before he can swallow it. His immortal head flies into the heavens. The sun and moon had alerted the gods to its death, so he takes revenge on them. When Rahu swallows the orb, we have an eclipse. But the orb returns to view because Rahu has no body.
Is it Rakesh, you mean?
Wonder what Rakesh is doing these days. You don't see him anymore.
I found out basically since they let me go, they bring him to America for a month, and they basically work him 24 hours a day, and they just say, we'll give you like a 30% raise, considering he probably makes about $8,000 a year. They are really desperate.
That's like slavery. Okay.
Pretty much.
All right. So, similar, China, Mongolia, and Siberia beheaded mythical characters case and consumed the sun and moon, and we experience eclipses.
Hmm.
Okay.
All right.
All right. In Indonesia and Polynesia, Rahu consumes the sun, but burns his tongue doing so, and then he spits it back out.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. In Armenia, a dragon swallowed the sun and the moon. That's what happens during an eclipse.
Oh, okay.
All right. In Transylvanian folklore, an eclipse stems from the angry sun turning away and covering herself with darkness in response to men's bad behavior.
Hmm, interesting.
So if you're not behaving well, there's going to be an eclipse in the
old
sky.
Charlie Sheen show, Men Behaving Badly, like that's sort of the basis of it.
Exactly. It was all about an eclipse of the heart. Here's one I like. Here's one I like. Where is it? Okay, so Chippewa people, they would start shooting flaming arrows into the sky to rekindle the sun, basically to get it back.
Uh-huh.
Tribes in Peru did the same for different reasons. They hoped to scare off the beast that was attacking the sun.
It's the whole coming down thing that really scares them.
Yeah, yeah. People were so stupid back then. Like, let's fire an arrow at the sun.
Yeah.
And it's going to light it up again, man.
Oh, I missed again.
And again.
And again.
And again.
Don't worry, my arrow's coming back.
It'd be great, like, they're launching arrows that burn down their crops. Like, shit. Oh, the sun's back.
Sun's back. Can't grow my corn because it's all burnt down, but still.
We may have overreacted on that one. Native people in Colombia shouted to the heavens, promising to work hard and mend their ways.
Mm.
Some worked their gardens and other projects especially hard during the eclipse to prove it. Like,
are they pulling like green peppers out of the garden?
Digging just a little quicker.
Plant those carrots faster.
In Norse culture, an evil enchanter, Loki, like the Avengers, was put into chains by the gods. Loki got revenge by creating wolf-like giants, one which swallowed the sun, thereby causing an eclipse.
Hmm.
A lot of sun swallowing. A lot of eating the sun.
Yeah, I see what you're going here.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to a little bit more like romance. You're a romantic guy.
Very much so.
To Australian Aborigines, the sun was seen as a woman who carries a torch. The moon, by contrast, was regarded as a male.
Hmm.
Because of the association of the lunar cycle with the female menstrual cycle, the moon was linked with fertility. A solar eclipse was interpreted as the moon man uniting with the sun woman.
Ooh.
So you missed your... If you were trying to spit out a few kids this afternoon, you needed to make it happen at 2:48.
Babe, we got 10 minutes. We got to make this happen.
I got a cramp. I got a cramp.
I come from a land down under.
West Africans of Benin switched the gender roles of the sun and the moon and suggest that orbs are very busy. But when they do that, when they do get together, they turn off the light for privacy.
Oh.
So they switch gender roles during the sun.
I'm going to have to call AJ Mattioli to confirm.
I was just going
to
say, that's very 2017. That's a very 2017 eclipse. In a Tahitian myth, the orbs are lovers who join up, providing an eclipse, but they get lost in the moment and created stars to light their return.
Ooh.
Yeah. A lot of like... you know, things get together, something swallows the sun, but then spits it out. It's all like really cool myth, but then they like spit it back. Oh crap, yeah. The sun's back. You know,
like, oh, gotcha.
Gotcha.
I'm gonna swallow you the next time. You know it.
In ancient Celtic culture, men and women would swap traditional garb with Celtic women in resemblance to the moon interchanging with the sun. Some research say kilts may have roots in the celebration. The fog or dew of other precipitation resulting from an eclipse was considered dangerous. The Japanese thought that poison would drop from the sky and cover their wells.
Oh, no.
People are so dumb. I'm just, like, amazed by, like, people figured out when eclipses were going to be, like, way before there was any, like, technology. There was, like, paper. Not even paper. Like, they figured things out. And we can't do anything. We can't. We have people, like, we have to warn people not to blind themselves.
Yeah.
But, all right, one more. Alaska natives believe that the moisture and dew could cause sickness. Dishes were turned upside down. Affected utensils were washed. So during the eclipse, Berlo, your plates and stuff can get affected by the sun and the moon.
Man. Thank God I have Ajax. Take that, eclipse! Lemony fresh!
Even today, there are some beliefs in the superstitions. Pregnant women are sometimes warned to stay inside, not eat, not carry sharp objects, and not eat cooked food from prior to the eclipse. Modern baby blogs ask if pregnant women should wear some sort of metal, such as a safety pin, to protect the baby.
Can you imagine if we continued on this stuff like to today, where it's like, total eclipse, get out the fridge.
I mean, we can make
clean
some,
it out.
We can make some new ones and see if they catch on. We have like what, 8 years to come up with a couple.
Yeah, all right. I like it. I like it. Let's get a couple writers onto this.
All Spanish people should skydive during the eclipse. Just, it'll melt their Spanish skin. But so did you think there any were fake? There was one that I made up in there.
He spewed out like 17.
I know. I know. I just kind of got, there was a lot. I just kind of kept reading. But if you had to guess.
I'm going to guess the one about burning the tongue and spitting it out.
No.
Transylvania.
No.
Which of the other 15 could it be?
The one I made up was the Celtic culture. Men and women would swap their garb in resemblance to the moon interchanging with the sun.
Gotcha.
But
that would have been cool if Conor McGregor did that this weekend.
Came out in drag?
Eclipse!
I'll bounce your head off the canvas in my skirt! Anyways, let's get to our guest.
All right.
Let's get to our guest. One of our guests. All right. Good. Maybe it like changes sound each time. That one's not pleasant. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Zane. It's Scott Brennan and Mike Berlew here. How are you, buddy?
Well, you didn't tell me Mike was going to be here. It's a party.
And there's my dog.
Oh, who's that?
There's my dog on cue.
That was me.
Oh, my God.
I always feel that. Hold on one second. You'll let him out, Mike.
All right.
Get out of here.
Generally on cue, as soon as we start recording, the dog is generally...
Yes, you know. I have a dog. He's on the same schedule.
But Zane, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes here. You were rather easy to communicate with, which is nice for a change.
Don't tell anybody. Yeah. Don't tell anybody.
Zane, did you survive the eclipse?
I did. I looked at it.
I did too. I couldn't help but peek a whole bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
I only did it once. It was behind the clouds. I'm like, all right, I got my one moment here.
Do it. You do it. At least you have a fun story of how you burn out your retina. You know?
Yeah.
Go to work tomorrow. I can't drive down the highway straight. But then you just got back from, I forget where.
Oh, are we recording right now?
Oh, we are. We are.
Okay. Always. ABC. Always be recording. Always be recording.
ABRC. Always be recording.
Why did I think of that right now when I used to yell that at my crew all the time.
What the hell is he telling us?
I used to say, what did I say? ABC. Always be filming. And now I could have been like ABC always be courting, and that would have been like it. I would have coined a phrase.
Yeah, exactly.
I missed it. One of your listeners is going to take it. They're going to put it on a shirt, and I'm out. I'm out like the $50 they're going to make.
Scott, I'll be back in like 20 minutes.
Damn it.
But then you just came back from where were you? You were like in Asia or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's been a few trips since then. There was Tahoe. There was Asia. I don't know, New York, Chicago was last. I was in Chicago last weekend. Yeah, I'm bouncing around. It's funny. I do it because I enjoy it.
Right.
But I have my rum company and I have my clothing company and I do some consulting for other brands and stuff. So I'm always on the move. I guess I'm probably home. Half the time, right. On the road half the time.
And where are you living now?
Los Angeles, the city of broken dreams and empty promises.
All right. Well, you're originally from New York, right?
I'm from Syracuse. Right. Although I'll usually say New York and people will assume the city and I'll just kind of let them go with it because it's a lot cooler to be from New York City than it is to be from Syracuse, but... For you, I'll own it.
Oh, you're an orange man. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't an orange man. I was a red dragon. I went to Cortland College, which is just south of there. Although it was a worse institution than Syracuse. But growing up, the Syracuse Orangemen were our professional team. So you got all giddy when you saw Derek Coleman at the mall or something like that.
Derek Coleman.
Sorry, I age myself, but that's where I am.
That's all right. It's not much better. We're here. We're here in Jersey, so
what part of Jersey?
Right now, we are in Denville, New Jersey, but I'm originally from Woodbridge, New Jersey.
What place are those? They're not resonating with me as far as towns.
Rockaway, Morristown.
So north.
Yeah, northwest.
Got it. All right,
then,
cool.
And then Woodbridge would be by like New Brunswick, like that kind of.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So you guys could commute. Maybe you commute every now and then to the
right.
City.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Got
exactly.
It.
But Zane, I know you from both Three Sheets and Drinking Made Easy, and I've been checking out Chug lately. But you've had several renditions of, I guess you could say, kind of travel shows focused around alcohol and drinks and whatnot.
You know, it's kind of you're saying the same thing that my therapist tells me. They're just like, just let it go. You're making the same show over and over. You have to stop. You have to find something new. You're right. I started doing Three Sheets for four seasons, and then I did Drinking Made Easy for three on Mark Cuban's network.
Yep.
Networks change and it's the thing back then I was one of the first drinking shows around. And so you were at these sort of small networks that were taking a chance and the show resonated and did really well.
Right.
Unfortunately, the network didn't always do as well. So I shut down about three, in demand, Mojo, Fine Living Network, and I guess HDNet in a way. So that I guess that's four, but.
Wait, they're all gone.
So then we moved on to Netflix. What's that?
They're all gone completely now?
You know, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. They either changed their names. I think Fine Living became Cooking and HDNet became Access. Yes. But nobody watches those channels anyway, so yeah. They're dead. They're dead to me. How about that?
Yeah. Hot take. But what you did, I know you were a writer and an actor, but when did you come up with the ideas of trying to do, were these all your shows? Did you pitch it with a group?
No, I went into audition for this part. When you're out in Hollywood, you got to sort of be a renaissance man. And, you can't just say, you can say, I'm going to just do one thing, but that's not how I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to figure out what I needed to do. It's so... A lot of people like me are actor, writer, director, producer, host, comedian, whatever it is that works.
Right.
I kind of throw things out to the universe, and if something does well, then that's where I'll put my eggs into that basket, and that's kind of what I've done. So at this point, I've done it all. On some level, I've done all those things well enough to make money doing them. So, but yeah, I mean. when Three Sheets first came about, they brought me in to audition for a show called You Should Open a Restaurant. So the two of you guys, one of you guys nominates the other to, you know, he's such a good chef, he should turn his house into a restaurant. So the network, I forget what network it was, maybe Food or Travel, would come in and turn your house into a restaurant and see how, you know, like bring in a chef and bring in waitresses and bring in a host and all that kind of stuff. And so my manager had sent me in for the host part, but the host wasn't the host of the show. He was like the host of the restaurant that would like seat people. And so when I went in and interviewed or auditioned or whatever it was, I just sat there and chatted with them. They're like, yeah, you're not right for this. We're looking for somebody just to seat people. But we have this show called Three Sheets, travel around the world and drink. Is that something you're interested in? I was like, you know, yeah. But it's funny because, you know, I made a joke about the land of empty promises, which is Los Angeles, which is where I live. These guys were from Seattle. They didn't know that rule. And so the next week they called me and we lined it all up. And a month later I was shooting the pilot. And 3 months after that, I was shooting the first episode. And I, you know, that started the momentum right there. That was back in like 2006 or something like that.
I was going to say, it's been a while now, right? Mm-hmm. Probably 10 years.
It's been a while. It's been a while. It's funny. I guess I can name drop a little bit. So I was at a bar on my 33rd birthday. And I was complaining to this guy next to me who happened to be George Clooney. He was also a few drinks deep. And he was telling me that, like, he's like, you know what? I didn't make it till I was 33. So this is your year, which turned out to be the truth. And he said, it's good that I didn't make it till I was 33, because if I would have made it any sooner, I would have been a dick. Uh-huh. And because I was asking, like, why are you like such a nice dude? And he's a very genuine, nice guy who just hasn't gotten jaded. He attributes that to just making it later in life. And so I guess that's you guys said I was easy to get in touch with. Yeah, of course. Why not?
You know what? I could relate to that. Like, you know, doing comedy and whatnot.
You got drunk with George Clooney?
No. I get drunk and act
different.
Like,
I got drunk with him when he was on The Facts of Life. He was a way different person than.
That's right. That's exactly right.
No, like young comics, you know, like the 22, 23 year old, you know, they have a good set. They're on top of the world. They post about how good their set was. And, you know, it seems like all the 30 year old and older comics are like, yeah, I suck. I'm terrible. Yeah. Like, you know, very humble and more fun to hang out with. So I can kind of see
that. Yeah, I mean, we've all seen it, right? We've seen the young guys get a really good taste of it. And I've seen friends of mine change overnight into just complete prima donnas. It's pretty amazing. So it's everyone's goal to be a prima donna, but there's got to be balance, right? If you you're overtly prima donna, you're probably not going to stay your position very long.
Good.
So when you started with Three Sheets and your other shows, did you go into it with an idea how you're going to differentiate when you go to each place, or was it kind of at first, I'm just going to go in there, enjoy some beers and whatever, and then you had to kind of learn the rhythm of these shows.
I had a plan, and when I went to do the pilot, we went to a Polish social club in Seattle, and so everyone there was Polish. It was basically like walking into Poland. And I didn't know if the network wanted me to be funny or smart or be able to drink a lot or be able to hold my alcohol. And so,
you accomplished none.
I accomplished all of those.
I was the most boring son of a bitch in that bar.
Yeah, the next morning was confirmation of that. But the you know, I was working for a network called In Demand. They later changed their name to Mojo. I hadn't heard of it. I didn't even have high definition television at the time. That was in HD. It was so new that the name of their channel was in high definition. That was such a big deal. They didn't care about their programming. It was just, everything was just super clear, crappy programming. But so I was just like, I don't care. I'm not going to like watch myself. I'm going to do whatever I want, whatever I think is funny, and just go for it.
Right.
And because I was able to do that and hone my craft on a network that I didn't think people were even watching, it let me just be myself rather than a watered down or filtered version of myself. And so for better or for worse, that's what I ended up doing.
I mean, it definitely comes through, on the screen for sure. Now, as you're doing, whether it's Three Sheets or, you know, any of the different shows, and you're traveling the world, this has to be like a dream come true. Is it hard to, like, to keep it all together, like, as far as, like, if you're drinking while filming all the time? How loaded are we getting? And, you know, is it hard to run that fine line of, like, being, you know, you are the host and you do have to maintain, like...
There was something that kept that all in balance, and in all seriousness, that was the Hangovers. I how many times have you guys gone out on a Thursday, you go out on a Friday, you go out on a Saturday, and on Sunday, the last thing you want to do is have another drink, let alone Monday, Tuesday, whatever. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. When we went out shooting, every day, you know, time is money. The crew, the camera guy, the sound, producers, they're all paid. You don't get paid for a day off. So we shot every single day, and usually it'd be like 4 to 5 days in the city, or yeah, about 4 shooting days in the city. And then you'd shoot four, like the first one we ever did was Ireland, then Wales, then Champagne, France, then Belgium.
That's awesome.
And so I had to drink every single day. And so you might have learned that lesson pretty soon when you have to wake up with a horrible hangover and you got to work. So you just learn to sort of at some point say, you know, is what makes me want to continue right now? Is it the alcohol? Is it me? Is it the producers? Like, are we good? Do we have it? You know, obviously sometimes I, you know, like when I was in Russia in some apartment and, you know, these guys busted out a bottle of vodka and we finished it. And then they said, no, you're not going until we finish one more. And I was just like, I'm here. Like, this is, let's do this, you know? You want to know the difference between me and the booze traveler? That's the difference right there, because I actually went for it.
Yeah, I was just going to lead into, like, well, what was, like, I guess Russia, but what was a time that definitely got, like, out of hand where you're like, oh, man, like, on screen, well, when were you the most under the influence?
I mean, the thing is like, I've had, like, a lot of friends in my life – a few friends that, like, when they drink, they just became like dicks,
right?
You know, the benefit of me doing this job is the more I drank, really the more fun, often the louder,
right?
But the more fun I would get. So it's not like any situation would ever get to a point where I didn't remember the night before or anything like that. So, but I definitely got drunk.
I mean, you are.
Yeah, but
there's certain episodes you guys are chugging on, like, you're a shot after shot. You're going,
yeah,
you know, taking down,
yeah, you know,
8%, 10%
beers. I'm working.
Yeah. I try to tell my girlfriend that, too, but she just calls me drunk.
You're in your underwear on the couch. That's why it's not working there, Scotty.
Yeah, that's right. It was in the script. It was all premeditated.
Well, let me ask you, with all these travels and what you're doing here, give me what you feel is the most underrated drink that you ever had that, like, nobody talks about, and what's, like, the most overrated thing where everybody goes to and you're like, oh, that's nothing.
Well, I guess so. There's two. I'll give you two answers to that. One is absinthe, and absinthe is just is alcohol that's in basically wormwood,
yep,
flavored with anise, which is like a licorice, mm-hmm, based. And people think that it's going to make them hallucinate because it has thujone, which is a psychotropic, you know, active ingredient. The catch is that the amount that's in an entire bottle is probably the amount you need to actually hallucinate at all.
Right.
And you can't, if you got through that whole bottle, first of all, you would die because it's often higher proof. So people end up having more shots and thinking that it affects them, but like you'd pass out from inebriation before that thujone could ever hit you. I mean, like, the percentage that it's in there is like a 1%. It's like, yeah, a trace amount.
Yeah,
so,
I did a semester in London, and like we're all sitting around drinking absinthe and we're like, come on, like waiting for, and then we just ended up all getting drunk and like falling asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. Yeah. So that one's oversold. I guess the other one is, hold on one second. Hey, I'm just doing a podcast. I'll be off in a second. Yeah. What is it? A bug?
Yes. Oh, get it.
Oh, yeah. My wife knows that I like bugs, and she caught me an iridescent green June bug.
Oh, all right.
Just put it in the kitchen. I'll eat it in a little bit. Thanks. It's delicious. So, yeah, that actually just happened.
That's awesome.
The other one is, you know, I guess I always liked rum And so here's really the reason why I created Monkey Rum is that, you know, there were basically, I'll just call them out by name. There's Malibu and Captain Morgan. And then basically when you get to a certain age, your tastes develop a little more and you want something that's a more premium offering to that.
Uh-huh.
And so I just, you know, hit a certain age and was like, wanted that and it wasn't available. So I sort of created it. And I think that people forget that rum is really the base of pina coladas and daiquiris and punches and all kinds of things that, like, you know, it's literally what they used to pay the British Navy in was like, mm-hmm. was rum. So I guess that's the answer, you know, absent this one rum, I think is another one that it'll make another resurgence. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the other thing is really like the craft beer movement was just starting when we were starting to do our show. And especially with Drinking Made Easy, we were at the beginning of it. Yep. And every time you went into a town, there was like one. I remember one time in our research when Alabama had zero breweries, which is just kind of amazing. It was the one state that didn't have any. But, you know, now it's like every block has a brewery, which I think is great.
I love it.
I'm fine with it.
It's a big hobby of mine. But so before we get out of here, I wanted to ask you, so when you moved on to Chug, was Chug you wanting to do this again, or was it the fans? Because I read that you raised almost $500,000 from crowdfunding, you know, just to shoot this show. Was that a nice, were you like, okay, I want to keep this going and do it on my own, or was that just the fans calling for more?
Yeah, I mean, look, I really enjoyed doing the show, and the networks, I think, sometimes get a little spooked by alcohol, even though I would argue that we never abused it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were always responsible when we were drinking and stuff like that. And that's why those little niche, you know, those smaller boutique networks were the ones that were able to support a show like that. So when the most recent network, which was Mark Cuban's Guy's Channel, which was HDNet, went away, you know, we wanted one more go at it, and especially the international version. I mean, going off internationally and going off and having a drink, it's the best way to like see a country, learn about the people, and right. You know, it's really it's kind of what everyone, at least everyone I hang out with, including my mom, you know, like goes to another country and she wants to check out the local wine or beer or spirits, and so mm-hmm. I really missed doing that.
Totally.
When we did Drinking Made Easy, we were domestic and Three Sheets was international, so I really missed doing that. So yeah, we did it, and then National Geographic Channel bought it, and then that contract expired, and Netflix just bought it.
Yep.
And so now it's on Netflix, and Three Sheets is on Hulu. Oh, and cool. And we're talking to Netflix about another season, so we'll see what happens.
That's awesome, man. I was excited when I was flipping through Netflix. I'm like, Chuck, like, oh, man, like, I've missed this, you know, this show or whatever.
And there's six episodes, which is kind of funny, but, you know. If it goes again, it'll probably be a little bit nuttier because I got ants in my pants and I got to get out there and get some drinks going.
Well, with that, before you get out of here, what can fans look forward to, and what are you working on, and when can we expect to see you in action again?
Yeah, so, I mean, I have a meeting every day, basically, well, for the rest of this week and half of next week.
That's not what the fans want to see.
Mm.
Well, no.
Meetings.
For shows, for different shows.
No.
So, today on the show, Adobe Acrobat.
So there's a lot of irons in the fire. I mean, I was traveling for a bunch, and then so my calendar when I get home is full.
Right.
And it's usually people talking about different shows and different, whether it's a network or a production company, whatever. So there's a lot of things cooking, and awesome. Hopefully when one of them pops, you'll just hear about it. I mean, you know, keep tabs on me on my social media. I'm a big mouth. I'll let you know when I'm doing something that I think is awesome.
Oh, well, where can people go to follow you?
It's everything/Zane Lamprey.
All right. Mm-hmm. Zane, so, thank you.
Instagram, you know, Twitter, whatever. Like, people are still on Twitter. MySpace. I'm huge on
you're
Friendster.
You're killing
Actually,
it on
I
MySpace.
Bought Friendster. No one even knew, but.
check out your vlog.
check out my blog that I write about potatoes. You'll love it. Just go to ZaneLamprey.com. It's all there.
Zane, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes, man. We really appreciate it. And good luck with all the projects you got coming
up. Thanks, man.
You got it. If I'm doing, when I do the next one, when you hear about me launching another show, reach out to me. You know how to do. You got my email. We'll do it again.
Definitely.
Next time awesome. I'll be drunk.
Yeah, awesome.
More drunk.
One and only Zane Lamprey.
Very laid back, man.
Oh, totally. He's I went through a big kick when I watched Drinking Made Easy on Axis, because it was like it was on demand. And when I discovered it, all the episodes were there, so there's like three seasons worth, and it was cool. Like, he would go to New Orleans and drink like at the old bars, but then he'd go to like a brewery. It was a really good show. Three Sheets was like crazy, because it was like international, and he would go to like this Russia and drink vodka with people, and it was
Eastern Europeans, man, they don't mess around with their alcohol, man. They say you keep going, you keep going with them.
But really cool. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back.
All right.
So we are back from Zane Lamprey and our killer eclipse bit. I mean, just the most brilliant thing.
You know what, Scott? I don't think anybody else will come up with an idea like that. No other podcast will talk about the eclipse.
Well, we are Z Morning Zoo here.
Yeah.
So, you know who the real eclipse is? Chris Christie, am I right? Zing! But yeah.
Laying in the sun, blocking the sun. Oh, that's that, old Christie.
That old Chris Christie. Mm. But anyway, what do you got, Burlo?
So the Powerball is up to $650 million coming this weekend.
That's nothing? That's what we make doing this.
Well, when do I get my first check?
As soon as I get mine.
Oh.
It's coming. Oh. It's coming.
I'm going to have to go over to Manskirt Brewery and ask them where it's at, man. Mm. What the hell?
I'm sure that'll work well.
God, I got thrown out of another brewery again.
I thought I was drunk. I kept asking them for my millions.
Yeah. Now I got to drive up to Adirondack Brewery and ask for their millions. But, you know, I was thinking, everybody says the same thing. If I win this, I'm gonna pay my parents. I'm going to get a house. Yep. I'm going to get a car. I'm going to do this and that. Have you ever thought about what you would do to lottery, and not like the what everybody says and all about, you know, giving away charity, buying this, buying that, but like the stupid stuff you would do with the money?
I guess we've all thought about it at some point, but I mean, I know one thing I would definitely do is I would buy a house, completely pay it off. So I have a main house, and I think I would try to not make it a crazy house. Like, I think I would do like $500,000 can buy you a really nice house. Like, what more do you need?
Outside of New Jersey.
Yeah. It's true. That's sadly true.
I was kind of thinking, like, if I ever won the lottery, I'd buy like the safe house and pay it off. It's like, all right, if I do everything stupid in my life, and when I'm at the tail end, I at least got that.
Well, that's what I mean by maybe like a $500,000 house, because you're still going to have to pay taxes, right? Mm. So, you know, the taxes are going to be maybe, say they're, I don't know, $15,000 a year, $20,000 a year. You're still good. You can make that. You can pay that, right? So when everything goes away, you've paid off your house, you just got to be able to pay those taxes. So I'd buy that. I would probably buy some kind of boat.
All right.
Some kind of boat. I'm not a big car guy, so maybe I would buy like a new Jeep or something like that. I wouldn't be buying like a Bentley or like cars. No. Cars don't do much for me. Like, I really don't care about cars.
The second you get a scratch in it, it's like, oh, it's over.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I would keep like pay off my pickup and have that hanging around to like haul things, but I'd probably buy like a new Jeep or something like that. And I'm not a big speed guy. I drive slow. For the most part, like I'm pretty much a speed limit dude. Like I'm five miles per hour over the limit.
Once you say for the most part, that usually means you speed 90% of the time.
No. I'm not. Are you? Do you speed? I'm not.
I generally go with the traffic. Like, my general deal is I do like 5 to 10 over the speed limit. 10 is like a major highway or something like that. The only time I push it over that is when everybody is going the same speed and you're kind of crumpled up, where it's like, all right, somebody taps their brakes, we're all dead, and I try to get past them, and also I might bump it up another 5 or 10 to get past them, but once I'm past them, I bring it back down.
Like when I got that speeding ticket in Vermont, that's so not me. Like, for speeding is not my ticket. Like, I should get something else, you know, like, I don't know what,
like,
but, But yeah, but then I would just spend a lot of money traveling. I'd probably never be at that house. I'd probably be just go see the world. Mm-hmm. Does it really go from one destination to the next, or go one, come back, go one, come back? And I don't think I'd stop working for a little while. I think I would.
Would it be something different?
Yes. I've thought about this before. Like, I maybe like would try to open like a brewery or something like that, or a brew pub, mm-hmm. possibly, and like something where I'm not like the manager and stuff, but I'm kind of like the like hands on, but not like the totally in charge. Or but I don't think I'd be going crazy like
no,
I don't know, just buying like giraffes and things to be in my house, and I don't know.
Like when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about some of the stupidest things I would think to buy. Now I won't go nuts like blow.
I bet you could get the General Lee pretty cheap after the last 2 weeks.
Got an easy 10 mil. The old General's in there.
I think with you know, all the stuff in Charlottesville, you could get a discount going real quick. You just gotta hide it in the garage because someone's gonna destroy it.
But I was thinking like some of the stupidest things, not in the sense of like that's a stupid purchase, but just in my mind, like, yeah, I'm gonna do that if I have the money,
right?
So here's some of the stuff I came up with. You ever see the pasta where they make it in like the big bowl of cheese, like the cheese wheel?
The pasta cheese wheel?
Yeah. So they
what am I missing in my life?
So they get like
it sounds amazing.
Yeah. So they make pasta, uh-huh. like a linguine or something like that, and then right. what they basically they have like a big wheel of cheese, and they hollow it out a little bit, and what they do when this pasta is piping hot, they put it on the cheese and mix it around that, so it's melting the cheese and getting into the pasta.
This sounds like heaven.
I know. But it, like, every time I see it, I'm like, that's probably a $40-$45 dish. I'm like, I'm not gonna just throw money at that in my rate, but if I won the Powerball, gonna get cheese pasta.
Like, you would go get one meal, or you would get the cheese pasta, like, maker?
Well, no, like, I don't know if I would buy the big wheel of cheese. I can just imagine it, sitting
around. So your lottery hopes are that you can get a $45
plate of pasta. Well, that's not the only thing, but, you know, that's something that came to mind. Yeah,
you know what, buddy? Maybe for our business meeting, we'll go out for $45 pasta, buddy. You don't even need the lottery.
All right, so that's off the list. That's awesome. All right.
Wow. All right. Big spender here. No. And I thought I was cheap. All right, here we go.
Like I said, this isn't like stupid expensive. It's just something stupid. I'm like, yes, if I won the lottery, I would do
next
that.
Next is going to be like, I'm going to buy an elephant.
Well, the next one is kind of close to that. I put down the hair, buy a fancy bird and find a way to make a deer a pet.
I don't like birds. I don't like birds as pets. I like seeing birds in nature. I don't like birds inside.
I just feel like it'd be cool to have a bird.
Like what kind of bird?
I've been trying to figure that out. Like, I mean, do I want, like, a parrot? Do I want something, like, big, like an emu? Or what, you know,
I want you to get an emu just so it tears you the fuck apart one day. When you're like, come here, emu. Like, giving it a voice. Like, come here, buddy. What are you doing, emu?
Boy, I'm the emu. I'm going to kill you
now.
And
it just takes its talons and shreds you like cheddar. No emo.
Like the cheese pasta.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We were kayaking yesterday, and there's like a tiny, tiny, tiny little island by the, like, it's right over here. But we're paddling, and Alex paddled close. He's like, holy shit! And it was like one of the, remember that video I took of that big ass, like, loon eating a fish? Mm-hmm. Right next door. It was like there, and it's like just poking its head out. Like, you don't want to go near those things, man.
No.
Why are you going to spend money on a bird that's going to kill you?
Why
do you want a deer as a pet? You live in Flanders. You can get a deer and probably domesticate it.
I just want to learn how to domesticate it. I figured it'd be like a cool pet.
I don't think so. A baby moose would be a cool pet.
I figured they'd be more destructive than a deer.
I don't know. Deer jump really high.
All right, we got it. Sounds like a shenanigans showdown, man.
All domesticate. A moose or a deer? All right. That's a little weird, but I don't like birds. They smell, too.
Hmm.
Their poop smells.
Yeah. Well, all poop smells.
Not rabbit poop.
Really?
I had a rabbit when I was a kid. I told you my parents fried it. And their poop is nothing. Their piss is what smells horrific. Hmm. The poop is like, it's like lentils. Like, you just can pick it up with your hand and it's nothing.
Hmm.
I know. All right, go ahead.
All right, next on the list. Look to develop a spicy wine.
So you want a wine that's going to be spicy.
Yeah, like kind of figure out a way, like, I mean, it's been getting popular with the beers, with like habaneros and stuff like that. Like, I can see trying to pair, like, having a vineyard with, like, making a good wine and pair with, like, some kind of spiciness, maybe ferment, like, jalapenos or something like that.
Now, why do you need $600 million to do that? Why don't you just do that now?
I don't know how to make wine, and I need the time to make the wine.
Read a book, damn it. Like, or watch a video. You can make wine.
That's fourth on the list.
Take the time to read a book. yeah, I mean, go for it. I mean, the only thing is, like, even with spicy beers, like, I've had a bunch of them. They're, like, good. Like, I want, like, an 8-ounce glass of them with, like, a steak. I don't want a whole, like... I'm not going to keep popping open spicy beer.
Well, I tasted a really good one from, what was it? Was it Voodoo Ranger? Or they have one where it's like an Oktoberfest with a little bit of habanero in it, and it's the perfect mix of the Oktoberfest with a little kick.
You want like a tiny kick. As soon as you, like I made, I don't know if you remember, I don't even know if you tried them, but at my old house I made a spicy blonde beer. It was one with poblanos, and the other one was with habaneros, and they were hot, man. They were good, but they were hot.
I don't think you really brewed when I started.
Probably shut it down
you.
At that point.
Yeah,
but okay.
All right. Start a collection of crappy athlete shoes. So, like, you know how, like, you got your Magic Johnsons, your big ballers, and stuff like that. I want to find where the Sean Bradley shoe is, the Jamarcus Russell. And just
once again, why do you need $600 million to do this? You can do this right now in your situation, now.
If I had the extra money, it's like, all right, now I got the opportunity to do it without any kind of fear or something like
that. Dude, for $600 million, you can have an actual athlete's shoe collection.
Well, again, this isn't like
crap. You can do this right now, and I think you should start. Like, go on eBay right now and bid on, like, Manute Bowles. Fucking
I like Manute
loafers.
All right, you want to keep going?
Ike Davis's elbow pad. Okay,
but you're enjoying this, right?
Sean Kemp's crack spoon.
Allegedly,
Lenny Dykstra's incisor.
Bought it off a cop on the street.
Lenny Dykstra's molar.
All right. Next one. Have a really large slingshot in my backyard.
Like a trebuchet?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, like there's full-out competitions like where a trebuchet is basically a giant slingshot, like that punkin' chunkin', like where you launch. They have competitions like who could shoot the furthest on their trebuchet.
Yeah, I would definitely want to have something
Once again, you can do this for like maybe $150.
Yeah, I understand.
So all your hobbies that you've come up with, you have $631,900,000 left to spare.
Well, you know, now we got plenty of room.
We're building slow. We're building. Okay, all right.
Learn Mandarin.
Again, Rosetta Stone is like $45.
And that's, again, you're not getting the point of this. This is not the expensive
I'm
purchases.
Thinking, but all these things.
These
should,
are the fun little
these
things.
These are all things you should do.
Yeah.
Right now. Learn Mandarin.
All right. Drive a monster truck.
All right. Like to work or just one time?
I mean, I got a few million now since I've gone cheap with the first
couple. I feel like we could take this list and just check them off during the year and make these things happen. You don't need to be a millionaire.
The year of Berlin. Yeah. And finally, have Twisted Sister perform for me.
That might be a little out of our league, but the other ones, I think we're good. Like perform like solo show, like you looking at Twisted Sister.
I mean, I guess
would you invite your
over.
Friend? Yeah, I was gonna say
that'd be kind of weird.
Yeah, real weird.
Where's the rest of the audience? No, you're mine, Dee Snider tonight.
And they gotta get all like pumped up. It's just you in a folding chair. Like,
have the Twisted Sister makeup on as they stare at them.
Have a Dee Snider wig on, but. Yeah, buddy, I you know what? It's good. Your dreams are way, you can accomplish these dreams.
All right.
You know, like, if you put your feet forward, you can start a crappy athlete hall of fame of shoes.
But that'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would be good. I think it would be ironic. Like, that'd be fun. Like, if I owned a bar and there was, like, an extra little, like, space, like, mm-hmm. you know, even, like, a couple walls that were empty, that would be a really funny thing. Like, the crappy athlete hall of fame. Yeah, okay. Well, I hope it works out for you.
Yeah.
When is that drawing? Tonight?
No, I mean, they had it on Saturday. I think it's Wednesday.
Do you play? I don't play. I should play.
I played the last one. Unless it gets up to 400, 500, I don't.
You know what I would build? I would take that money and build a sick-ass like podcast studio. Like,
yeah, that
like,
would.
Like, really cool. Like, state-of-the-art, like, where we have an engineer where I don't got to do any of this stuff. Like, we just
I know a guy you can buy a board off of.
Oh, yeah. Where we just show up and there's like real cool stuff and refrigerators and
invite people over and where people are like, oh, this is almost chilling than doing work.
Yeah, like Joe Rogan's got a cool, he's building a new one. I can't imagine what that's gonna be like, but he's got like a cool studio set up. I would do something like that. But I guess it's time for our second guest, huh?
All right.
Well, who we got?
What we got coming to here is the Bug Show.
What we got coming to here. You sounded so far in there.
Well, I'm learning Mandarin, so I'm coming back to English.
What we got coming to here is... I can always tell, like, when you're put on the spot and when you, like, when you're not. You're like, what we got coming to here is open window... computer's slow right now.
A pasta and a cheese wheel.
All right, try again. Yeah. What we got coming to here is...
We have the Bug Chef, David George Gordon. He's produced multiple cookbooks on how to cook different insects, such as cockroaches and tarantulas and items like that. And he's going to be on the show to talk about his books and also coming up the Brooklyn Bug Festival coming over Labor Day weekend.
That would be fun to go to.
Yeah.
You've eaten a bug.
Yeah, one grasshopper.
Have you eaten anything else before? I ate those little larvae before. They're covered in like hot like seasoning. I ate that before. They come in like a package.
I think it's only been grasshopper. I'm trying to think. I know they do like the.
And you said the grasshopper tasted like nothing, really, right?
There was no flavor to it whatsoever. Yeah. So I'm gonna have to ask him what's a proper grasshopper.
I know that cricket powder is like getting big. It's like protein powder, but made from crickets. I don't know. But yeah, let's get him on the phone. He goes by his elusive middle name.
Hello.
Hi, is this David George Gordon?
Yes, it certainly is.
Hi,
How are you?
We're doing good. This is Michael Berlew and Scott Brennan for Verbal Shenanigans. How are you doing tonight?
Just great.
What's up, Dave?
Where are you physically located?
We are in Denville, New Jersey right now.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Coast to coast.
Yeah. Now, as we asked our previous guest, did you get that good view of the eclipse today?
Oh, I definitely did.
Were you
spoiled? It was about 93% coverage. And I went out with those little glasses and my grandkids, and we just had a blast.
You're lucky. We had like a 70% one that was very like unfulfilling.
Oh, that's pretty good. Well, you know, it's funny. It's surprising me how light it still will be, even though, you know, 90% of the sun is blocked out.
That's what
I was
thinking.
It did not look like nighttime. It looked like polarized sunglasses or something.
Mm.
It was interesting.
You figure it'd be a scene from, like, Independence Day where just the entire horizon just starts getting darker and darker.
Yeah, I wanted, like, pitch black for like 10 minutes.
Well, I was kind of cheering for a Martian attack
to come out of it.
Well, we're all looking at the sun, in comes another point. So, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't super excited about it. Part of it is I'm just like so, I don't know, but the daily news is so freaking unusual these days that I'm kind of like overstimulated, I think is what I was going to look for.
Mm.
So I was like, couldn't we have the solar eclipse like next year or something?
No, yeah. I disagree. I think we need anything to get our minds off the daily news.
Personally,
I'll take an eclipse tomorrow.
Right. So, David.
So, what can I tell you guys? I think you're interested in my bug eating career.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I guess that's always a good start. That's what we ask all of our guests about. You know,
we ask all our guests about their bug eating career.
Yeah.
We're a bug-eating podcast.
Yeah. Right?
We just interview bug-eaters.
Well, this is the first one who might actually say, yeah, eating bugs, so.
All the bugs all the time or whatever, yeah.
So, I mean.
Nice.
So, I guess the easiest question is where it all started. Were you one of those kids that would eat, like, worms in your backyard? Or when did you find.
Yeah, you know what? I was not at all one of those, here, I'll give you a dollar if you eat this beetle kind of guy. But I'll tell you, I write books for a living. It's my thing, science writing. I'd written a book about cockroaches. And in it, there's a whole section about cockroaches as food and as medicine, because I thought that was pretty unusual. But that also led me to a lot more articles that were written at the time, almost like from an anthropology perspective, on how people eat insects in Indonesia, for example. And you know, it's kind of sparked my interest. Sort of like, well, why don't we eat bugs? It's just kind of odd. It's a taboo in our own culture, but so common around the world. And, rather than write a scholarly text, I decided to write a cookbook. And that's how my book, The Eat a Bug Cookbook, was created.
So about how much of it was you, about how long did it take for you to figure out like recipes and preparing it and figuring out how to.
Oh yeah. You know what? It was actually very difficult writing a cookbook. I have great respect for cookbook authors now because it's like sort of a how-to book, but it's also kind of a, you know, you have to have engaging travelogue-y type stories that lead up to the recipes. It's a very rigorous art writing a recipe, which I was not aware of at the time. It took me about a year and a half. And, you know, the book came out in 1998. So I've actually kind of been out and cooking with bugs for at least about 20 years.
Oh, wow. So, I mean.
Yeah.
With the bugs itself, do you find it as like a replacement for some of our regular things like chicken or steak for protein? Or is this just something like you consider we should do on the side along with our regular foods?
Yeah, I think if we were wise and cautious and we paid the true price of what a steak really costs, you know, we're willing to do that, sort of like the same way that someone might buy a lobster today. I think there's still going to be a place for all these conventional meats, but I think there's going to be a real hunt for other kinds of protein that aren't already in production.
Mm-hmm.
And insects seem to be a really good, really good way to go.
Now you've eaten probably, I don't know, who knows, dozens, thousands, hundreds of different types of bugs. Is there one that like stands out to you as one that you actually enjoy the most? And is there one that you've eaten and you're like, oh my God, this is simply just protein?
I'm going to have to give you my guilty pleasure. Some of them, like crickets, to me are kind of boring. And a lot of people sell cricket powder.
Yeah,
that you
I was
can
just,
mix
I was saying
to
Mike before.
Or make pancakes.
Yeah, I had a cricket powder. Yeah. I had a cricket powder like granola energy bar kind of thing once before.
Yeah, but you know, I never hear anyone say, "Oh wow, you can really taste the crickets in here."
Mm.
They're like they're so buried by chocolate or nuts or berries or anything to distract you away from the actual flavor of the bug. So I'm a little skeptical about that. But I do have to say my guilty pleasure, I just love cooking. I love making deep-fried tarantula spiders. Batter them with tempura batter. Singe off their hair, of course. and then batter them with tempura batter, dip them like you would like a shrimp or a vegetable, and deep fry it.
Now, how did this start? Like, did you, was that the way you tried it first, or you cooked it yourself first?
No, that's a recipe I actually had to develop over a little bit of, gee, what is it? I'm sorry, it's a helicopter coming right over my head. So, are we recording, by the way? Capturing this? Oh, okay. Oh, good. I was going to say, I had read that people like the natives of Venezuela actually there's a film of this, catching and cooking tarantulas and eating them. But it's very much like throw it on the coals. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating to me that someone actually thought these were good food. So I started looking that up, and I learned that in Cambodia, there's a sort of a big tradition of eating tarantulas as well. So
are you ordering like batches of tarantula, or you, because yeah, obviously you're not catching them in Seattle, right?
They're a lot. Yeah, that's correct. And I get mine usually from suppliers in like Arizona. Hmm. You know, there are some areas in the West where they actually have tarantula crossing signs during the breeding season on highways. Really? Because they're so abundant. Oh, yeah. Wow. Please don't run over our tarantulas. So anyway, after a lot of experimentation, I came up with this recipe. But what I want to say is that the, you know, meat is basically muscle, whether you're eating a pork shoulder or a chicken breast, it's the muscle that we want. And the legs of the spiders have lots of white, it's almost like crab meat, muscle in them. So they're pretty tasty. The other thing that's nice is, unlike, let's say, a grasshopper or a beetle, the body armor is not really crunchy. It's more chewy in a spider. Mm. It's a slightly different formulation of chitin. So you can actually really enjoy these legs. That's what I usually serve after I've deep fried them. I serve the legs with a little bit of smoked paprika in there. So it's mostly your color, but they're genuinely good. If someone said to me, you know, you can have anything you want for your birthday, I would say, well, lobster tail or tarantula spiders. I like that. Good.
Now, as any other chef says, and all the importance is to have your ingredients as like fresh and from a proper source. When you make these cookbooks or you attempt cooking themselves, are you capable of, say, like going outside and like catching a certain insect, or do you have to get it from a certain area to get proper flavor?
No, usually when I'm doing programs, a couple of things. Number one, it's oftentimes for large groups. I mean, I did the Explorers Club annual banquet. That was 1,000 people. So I can't just go out and get, you know, Katie did for 1,000 people on my own. And I found it's a lot easier to buy from suppliers and a lot of places where they're actually raising these critters for human consumption. That makes the health department a lot happier if they can point to a piece of paper. You know, the crickets I'm serving are USDA approved. I actually can show them a little certificate for that. Or these grasshoppers I'm buying from France were raised in a grasshopper farm in the Netherlands. I have documentation I can show people for that. So it's a lot easier to get those things and build recipes around them. I guess that's what I'm saying. And save some of the really off-the-wall stuff, scorpions and giant centipedes and such, for smaller groups when you don't need a million of them.
No, like I was saying in the last question I asked you, so the best thing is your deep-fried tarantula. What's the worst bug you've tried? What's the grossest?
Oh,
come on. There's got to be something,
you know,
that's just stomach-turning.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. The giant centipedes, you can buy these creatures from, they're Vietnamese or they're South American, and they're like 10 or 12 inches long. If you know what a centipede looks like, they've got all these little legs on either side. And when they're alive, they slide back and forth. You know, they sort of have their own little creeping way of walking. And they're kind of frightening. Plus, they're fast. So they give me the creeps. And then to compound that, when you cook them, they don't taste very good. So, yuck.
Now, do you ever eat
these? That's the worst. They have a very chemically like taste.
Mm. Do you ever eat these bugs alive, or is it always prepared?
No, you know, I actually, you know, I'm a nature lover myself, so I don't want to cause anything pain that I don't need to. Right. And usually what I do, if I get something that's live, I freeze it. You know, it takes about overnight, and then these things are frozen, and they don't. But they basically are drifting off into a deep sleep because they're cold-blooded animals. So they just get slower and slower. I don't think they suffer at all that way. And I've done experiments. It's like fish, fresh or frozen. You know, I can't tell salmon that often whether it's been previously frozen and thawed. So I can't really tell that with the crickets and things like that.
Interesting. So as you started making these cookbooks and you were going around like touring, what was the general feedback when you first started making these? Were people like telling you, oh, that's kind of gross, or were people like accommodating and more free thinking?
You know, when my book came out in 1998, I was definitely the weirdo in the room. And not so many people were really into this idea.
We can understand.
I was on a lot. I got a lot of publicity because of that. And I was on Conan O'Brien's show when the book first came out. But I also was on, like, The View, you know those guys, The View?
Mm-hmm.
And a woman whipped out a can of bug spray and sprayed one of my dishes. I mean, it was like a comedic moment. But can you imagine doing that to any other chef?
No.
You know, I'd like to show you my escargot. Well, hold on a moment. Get the bug spray. And so the first few years, I got a lot of sort of like, how do you ever get on the show anyway kind of stuff. It was like comedy. But I would say over the last, I'm going to say 8 to 10 years, people have been getting progressively more into insect cuisine. The UN came out with this big report like 5 years ago about why we should all be raising and eating more insects. It's like a food and agriculture organization report. And now there's a whole crowd of people, you know, they call themselves entopreneurs.
Mm.
Which is pretty humorous, like entomology or whatever, entomophagy, I guess.
I get it.
So entrepreneurs are busy making, cricket granola and chirps, taco chips, and all sorts of crazy stuff. It's become quite a deal. And, you know, I went to a conference last year. There were like 150 people who had some stake in the industry were all at this conference. So it's not like I'm no longer the only geek in town by a long shot.
Now let me ask you: is this just you, or does it extend to your family and loved ones? And I think you mentioned you had grandkids. Like, are you making them eat bugs or letting them try it, or is it just kind of you're the weird guy at the party?
My extended family is not that into it, although they think it's neat that I'm doing it. But actually, for example, my son is a very picky eater. He doesn't like vegetables, for example, so he's not too excited about what I'm cooking. But my wife's definitely into it. She sometimes critiques my recipes. You need more garlic in this one, you know. And she's definitely very supportive of this. The funniest thing is my youngest daughter is like an ethical vegetarian. And when I wrote the book, she was like 10 years old and was totally appalled that I was killing these charming little creatures. And she would actually come into like the kitchen and give one of those like white glove inspections to make sure she wasn't going to find like a stray antenna or something. So the book came out. She was a bit bored about it, but it wasn't her thing. And then if you flash forward like 5 or 6 years, she's in high school. And there was this contest on the radio. If you would do something outrageous or gross, you could win an opportunity to meet the band Radiohead.
Ooh, okay.
And my daughter, of course, being an enormous Radiohead fan at the time, was immediately, one morning I wake up and she's talking on the phone to the radio station. Well, I could eat a scorpion or a grasshopper, you know. And they thought that was great. She got on the thing. I had a coach her, you know, make sure you chew with your mouth open so they can hear it on the radio. And she ate the grasshopper and the scorpion, and people are amazed, and she did get to meet Radiohead. So now her opinion of the book is pretty spectacular.
Well, I mean, Radiohead itself is pretty. They're pretty elusive in general, so that, not bad.
Yeah,
not
right.
Bad for
yeah,
even,
yeah, this is a real,
yeah,
real privilege.
I think I'd eat a grasshopper to meet Radiohead, to be honest with you. But
yeah, right.
So, what's your overall message? What are you trying to do with this? Are you trying to, you know, enlighten people on an alternative protein, something we don't, you know, crush the stigma of eating bugs, or are you having fun with it?
Yeah, I have to tell you the real underlying thing behind what I'm trying to do. I really want people to understand that insects and their kin, they're amazing creatures, and they're not gross and disgusting. People are always like, you know, get that bug out of here, or spraying the perimeter of their home to kill spiders, or it's like we get really extreme about our dislike about insects. And I think getting a nice platform like this to tell people, hey, you really need them. You know, the planet would basically shut down in weeks if we didn't have them. So I like being able to use that as a message without getting really preachy. And I can do that during a cooking demonstration and get people kind of excited about it. Also, I guess as I've been doing it for a long time, I'm learning way more about the way we regard food and what counts as gross. And, you know, it's basically what your parents or your grandparents gave you as you were growing up that becomes a comfort food.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that we eat chicken eggs is pretty weird to me. That's, when you think about it, kind of gross. But your parents or your grandparents have a staple of their supply. Same way that in places like Uganda, people have favorite grasshoppers that they eat. And, you know, that's just like mom used to make. So that's a comfort food for them. It turns out, by the way, that I love the statistic. 80% of the world's cultures eat some kind of bug. And we're in that 20% that thinks it's weird.
Well, if you want to get technical, I mean, most FDA laws say, like, well, you can have a certain amount of fly parts or cockroaches.
Oh, yeah, right.
Everything. So we're probably up to 100.
Food defect action levels. I love that.
He said a bug, not parts of bug.
Yeah, right. Well, I also have to say they have the same standards for rodent hairs and feces.
I know. All right, stop it. Stop it.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Go ahead, brother.
So, I mean, I'm looking at your site, and you've written many books, different cookbooks. You've done the Uncover Animals series. But I also want to bring up, you're listed as a Sasquatch seeker. And I wanted to get some kind of info on what you've done in that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to throw it out there. If you were on, like, a dating site, and you're, like, bug eater and Sasquatch seeker... You have to redo your profile a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. I do have to say, though, I met my wife through Match.com, and then I have my profile picture. I'm holding an octopus tentacle.
I love it.
And I thought that was pretty out there, but it attracted the right woman, that's for sure.
I tried the whole online thing, and I took this picture, and it's like me giving a thumbs up, and I thought that was cool, but in the background is a meat smoker. And like, I don't know, if you're gonna like date a guy in front of a meat smoker, like most women are probably worried they're gonna end up in it if
go. Oh, an eater.
go ahead
yeah, where were we going with this?
Sasquatch.
Yeah, my most recent book, it's only 2 years old, called The Sasquatch Seeker's Field Manual. And it's actually kind of a thoughtful book, I think. It's not just about, ooh, all these great stories about Sasquatch. It's about how to gather evidence. It's like, is there one or isn't there one? For a while, I was joking. I was going to call the book Put Up or Shut Up. Because, like, over the last 40 years, we don't really have that much new to say about this creature. Mm. And so this is mostly about how to become what they call a citizen scientist. Go out and gather data yourself that can be used by experts, you know, footprint casts or what have you, so that we can actually have some scientific understanding of whether this creature exists.
Now,
it was a fun project to work on.
Now, have you gone out yourself and tried to see, find any evidence or search for him? And
well, I haven't gone expressly on a trek just to see a Sasquatch. Although now that you mention it, that would be a good thing to do. I spend a lot of time in the outdoors because I'm a nature writer. So that's always been a subject I'm really interested in. Also, if you think about it, there's a real kind of fundamental thing about this creature, whether it's even just mythological. It's like the old man of the forest or the wild man of the woods or something, that we seem to need a wild representative. Even in, you know, Washington State or British Columbia. Yeah, right. Thank you. Ding. Yeah, that's right.
Well, that reminds me, Mike.
Right. It's like Santa Baby. If only you'll believe in me. I'll believe in you. If only you'll believe in me.
Mike, you once pissed off a Sasquatch. We tried to get a Sasquatch guy on the podcast. What happened again?
What basically happened was he was somebody who hunted for Bigfoot. And he also, on the side, he helps try to find missing children. And right. I just sent a general email, you know, hey, we could talk about Sasquatch. We can learn about your missing children thing. And he's like, I don't find it funny that you want to talk about missing children. No, thank you.
Yeah, right.
I tried to explain to him, you know, we are serious at times, too. We can have fun with it, but he just never replied.
Yeah, We tend to do that to different people.
Like I told you off the air, the funniest thing on earth would be if those missing children are with Sasquatch right now. And he's just mocking him.
Yeah, right. That's right. And living a good life.
Yeah.
That's right. Look, somebody loves them. Yeah. That's pretty good. Well, my Sasquatch book has become really popular. I don't know why over the last, let's say, 5 years, people really got into Sasquatch. I wrote a little book about Sasquatch in 1992. And, you know, it was popular then, but nothing like the household word that Sasquatch or Bigfoot has become today. I even have one of those things you put in the windshield of your car, a solar protector or whatever that is, that has an enormous picture of Bigfoot on it. That was an eBay item, I think.
So what's on the horizon here? Where are we going with the bug stuff and the books and the Sasquatch? And what are we working on?
Some really good things are happening. You know, as a matter of fact, you're the perfect people to broadcast this. Over the Labor Day weekend, there's this big event that's being planned called Brooklyn Bugs, and it's a festival of edible insects.
That's awesome.
So people go online and look for Brooklyn Bugs. Going to be an enormous banquet. I think it's like a $100 plate dinner. And there's going to be a market where people are selling their bug product.
I'll be there with my cookbook. Yep, your cookbook.
Well, I'm giving a talk, believe it or not. I'm giving a talk about a guy from the 1880s who wrote this book called Why Not Eat Insects.
Really?
He's a British guy. And obviously it didn't have that much of an impression on British
cookies. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But he's like, you know, I was way ahead of the curve. So I'm giving a talk about that. And I'm helping with the banquet. And I'm just going to hobnob with the stars and have a gay old time. And eat lots of bugs, of course. So that's one thing. That's just this Labor Day weekend.
That's awesome.
Coming up really soon. In November, I'm giving another paper at the Entomological Society of America. They have their annual meeting in Denver. And I'll also be co-hosting a bug banquet in Denver at a pretty, I don't know what you call it, hipster restaurant. So that's also going to be fun.
That's awesome. And you're the type of guy, I tell this to all like the niche guests we get, like, you know, you got to start a podcast, man. You really do. You have an audience, you do a half hour on different bug topics every week or every month or whatever it is, and you totally should do it.
Yeah, that would be fun. I agree with you.
It's so easy, man, and it's the way to go. No one tells you what to do or how much time you can do.
Well, you're making it sound really easy yourself.
Nice talking.
I mean, it's not easy dealing with Mike, but other than that, once you get the equipment set up and the recording, it's nothing, man, and you should totally do it. You'd find an audience quick.
Well, thank you. I'll try that.
But I want to thank you. You got one more question, Mike?
I was just asking, I mean... with all the stuff he's done with Bugs and Sasquatch, he talked about, like, being the weird person. Is there any other kind of field you're kind of look at to research or do a book on?
You know, actually, right now, I'm looking at a pretty straightforward, normal one about a watershed. People don't always know what that word means. It's like a
just kidding.
Yeah, right. So it's about a special place near where I live. My wife's an oil painter, so we've talked about doing a book together, and I'd love to be able to work on that with her.
That's awesome.
But I don't have another crazy book in mind. Partly because I wonder whether anyone reads anymore. Hard to say. But I like the idea of a podcast. To tell you the truth, I really love public speaking. You know, well, it's like being in a room full of people is a rush.
Well, think about it. Say you get 100 listeners a week. That's doing a speech to 100 listeners a week. You know what I mean? Like, say you get 1,000 listeners. Yep. That's 1,000 people in your town hall. And you're doing 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, whatever works for you. And you have an important topic. You could bring guests on that you find important and that relate to you. I always encourage, like, there's a guy that comes on with us, Tom Verney. He is a retired NYPD officer, detective.
Nice.
But he's also a gay man, but he's pro cop and all about the education of police. But he's all about the equality of LGBT. He's just an amazing person. I tell him every time we talk to him, you have to have a podcast. Like, your voice is so important. And I'm telling you the same thing.
Can I ask you one craft question?
Yes.
How do you monetize that? How do you make money off of that?
You don't really at the beginning at all, really, and you just look for sponsors. Maybe, you have something that, you know, the bug thing. You could advertise with the cricket bars and the powder and the bug stuff, and that's where it would be, because remember when you advertise with the podcast, right? It unlike radio, it never goes away. So, say you have 50 listeners your first episode. But 3 years from now, you have 10,000 listeners. They can go back and listen to episode one, and that ad is still there. You know what I mean? So it's a different type of thing. It's actually way better than radio ads. But
I would think,
And you should just do it. But you're not doing it from. You got to start. You got to start from humble beginnings for sure. You got to just do it for fun.
Yeah. Right.
Do it.
Well, I'm pretty humble. I'm into that.
No, but you know what I mean. Do it for your message. Yeah. Like, there's so many problems. You could do an episode on ants, an episode on, crickets, right. An episode.
Hey, you're making me hungry.
do an episode on this picture of Neil deGrasse Tyson about to eat a bug.
There you go.
On his Twitter.
Oh yeah, that's right.
What does that guy know?
That's about
he knows
as
nothing.
Happy as I can get is doing. I did the Explorers Club annual banquet a few years ago. It was at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, and, you know, tuxedos and gowns and all these crazy explorers. It was really hilarious. I actually sat down for a while, you know, ate dinner right next to this guy who was going to take one of those amphibious vehicles. You know, we call those the ducks.
They use them
in recreational stuff.
Boston, yep.
He's basically making one in China that will take him from Great Britain to Indonesia on this little amphibious vehicle.
That's awesome. Going
through, along the coast and all that stuff. And I was like, man, that's great. You need a ship's naturalist, meaning me.
He said,
oh, sure, but it's going to take about a year.
So
then I lost some interest there.
So, David, if people want to go check you out or say hi or see some of your work, where should they go?
Well, I definitely am going to push for Brooklyn Bug over the Labor Day weekend. I live in Seattle. You can always contact me through my website, thebugchef@davidgeorgegordon.com. And if people are in Seattle, or, you know, I guess I travel enough that I might be in a city near you. So the good way to do that is follow me on Facebook, The Bug Chef. And I usually post where I'm going to be next.
Awesome, man.
Hopefully cooking bugs in Seattle sometime soon.
Thanks so much for coming on, and we wish you the best of luck with everything that's going on, and maybe we'll get together one day and you can cook some bugs for us.
That would be good. Come to Seattle. That'd be a blast.
Oh, Brooklyn's a little closer.
Yeah, Brooklyn's closer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, if you can make it to that event in Brooklyn, you would be, you'll be stunned by some of the material there. There's a guy who's also a bug chef whose name is Chef Peavy. He's tall, he's black, and he's screamingly gay. But he's really hilarious. So his cooking demos are sort of like watching the Pee Wee Herman show or something. It's just really... he's a trip, and he's actually a trained chef and all. So
that's awesome.
There's gonna be all sorts of colorful characters at this thing. Mm. You have a week worth of podcast. No. I mean, a month worth of podcast. Yeah,
David, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon. All right.
All right. Take care.
All right. The Bug Chef.
Hmm.
I would try the tarantula.
I'd be down. I mean, I'm pretty laid back. If I don't like it, I go ill and put it down. I'm not gonna.
I think anything prepared,
yeah,
is a little different than just
yeah. Eating. Somebody hands me a cockroach, you'd be like, why did you have that in your hand?
Yeah, anything like prepared and like done would be fine, but eating live bugs and stuff, that's a whole different ball.
No.
Eating centipedes, I mean, that's like why, fear factor stuff.
Yeah, that's why I did the grasshopper. I mean, I kind of figured, all right, this is the simplest thing, so.
Yeah.
It was a new way to bring in the new year, you know?
New way to bring in the new year.
Grasshoppers.
But fun episode tonight.
Hey, before we go off the year, prediction, what's going to happen this Saturday for McGregor and all right, Mayweather?
Good call. All right.
And before you go, did you hear that apparently Mayweather was cursing and shouting, going nuts because Justin Bieber stopped following him on Instagram?
No.
That is a true story from TMZ. Apparently, Justin Bieber is going through like a church thing to try to get his life back together. And like one of the
he canceled his tours, I know that.
Yeah, and one of the items he did to kind of, you know, get your life together was, you know, get out the bad influences. So he stopped following Floyd Mayweather, and a report out of TMZ that he was basically nuclear, as they put it, as he found out that Justin Bieber stopped following him on Instagram.
The real question is, does Justin Bieber still follow Connor? That would be weird. And then they'd somehow make some race thing out of it. You know what I mean? All right, here's my prediction. Let's put it on tape. All right. Fight's going to go 12 rounds.
All 12.
Remember, it is a boxing match. Okay, so Floyd is going to outbox Connor, meaning he's going to land more and not get hit, you mm-hmm. know, which is what Floyd is wonderful at doing. Connor's going to get some explosive moments early on, like third, fourth round, but Mayweather's just going to outlast him, outbox him, and get the decision.
Okay.
So Mayweather in the decision. Now, what I hope happens is McGregor lights Floyd up in the third round, and he's dead on, unconscious on the canvas, and the world implodes, and there's another eclipse because Connor's a magic man.
I'm taking the sun.
I'm fighting the moon next. The moon's a pussy. That's what I hope would happen. Mm. Connor's this magic personality that has so much confidence in himself that he's kind of scary, man. He's amazing, man. He's even if his skills don't know, he has weird angles, and Floyd seems to be distracted by the weird things. He doesn't seem to be all there, and I don't know. Connor's got a quote unquote puncher's chance. He does.
So I guess as a follow up, since you think it's going to go all 12,
yep.
Do we get number two?
No. Here's why I think we don't get number two, because it's just such a mass media event. It shuts down UFC for a while, like in that division. And if Connor wins or last, he's a winner,
right? Conor doesn't have to win this fight to be the winner of the... Mm-hmm. Conor goes, hey, I lasted 12 rounds with the boxer. I don't even box. I'm the king of the world. I lasted with the number one fighter of all time. The second fight, even if Mayweather's off and like we're... He prepares for it, for that final money grab by Mayweather, and he annihilates Conor. Mm-hmm. Conor, if he lasts, he won the fight. Mayweather needs to win the fight, like, outright to win. I mean, obviously, he gets the, whatever, $300 million.
Yeah, something insane.
But I think there's no pressure on Conor at all, and Mayweather has everything to lose. If Mayweather goes and gets knocked out by an MMA fighter... It's terrible for boxing.
Boxing's dead if that happens.
Yeah. I mean, boxing loves this, though. This is the biggest fight. It's funny because they have two big fights in a row for once in their for a while. But you hear it here. Mayweather by decision. How about you? Go ahead.
I am going to say Mayweather by knockout in the fifth round. I think.
Mike Kellerman over here. Here we go.
My thought process on this is early on, I think Mayweather is going to be cocky, kind of play around and all. He's like, ooh, ooh.
So he's knocking Conor out.
I say that. Yeah, because I think early on he'll be a little cocky, like, try to punch me, and Conor's going to get frustrated. But I think somewhere in there, Conor's going to get, like, one good punch that will stun Mayweather a little bit. And somewhere in his head, he'll say to himself, all right, I got to knock him out because if this is the last thing... moment of my career, I cannot go out getting beat up by this white guy,
this Irish bastard.
Yeah, so I'd say somewhere in like the fifth or sixth round, he keeps on playing with him, then he does like his insane boxing and actually knocks him out.
All right, so Berlew's got a knockout in the fifth round. I've got a decision by Mayweather, but I'm sure, like you, like me, you're hoping it's a Conor knockout.
Every single person on the planet is basically begging for Conor McGregor to get that.
And then,
or worst case, just scream, fuck it, and then give him a roundhouse kick.
And then people just migrate to Ireland to their king, and the world shuts down, and sports as we know it. Conor is a god after that. Yeah. If Conor knocked out Mayweather, he's a god. He's the most popular sportsman in the world. If he knocks him out on Saturday. Not even close.
Not even.
It's Conor, then LeBron. Or Conor, and then who's ever second. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it goes down. Berlew, let's get the fuck out of here. I mean, the F out of here. Anything to promote?
We'll do, we did a podcast there, the Kilt Fest in New Jersey.
Back?
Yep. September 9th, 2017, Mercer County Park between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. For tickets and event info, go to www.kiltfestnewjerseynj.com.
All right. And I'm going to promote the Decomposition Podcast. I happened to be a guest on their upcoming episode. They invited me to be a guest. They actually saw me at a stand-up show. And something wrong with them, but they liked my set, and we just started talking about talking, and they invited me on. They dissect songs, bad songs, and explain why they're bad. We happened to do an episode on Korn's Got the Life, and it should be coming out like this Monday. So Decomposition, go follow them on whatever, you know, social media platform.
I was hoping you were going to do Adidas.
No, Adidas was actually fun. The later Korn was not fun. Mm. But let's get out of here. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. Share it with your friends. Go check out Zane Lamprey. Go eat some bugs. We're out of here. Bye-bye.
See ya.
She called me late last night. Say she loved me so.